Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to remind you all to subscribe, like, and follow at Goalkeeper Podcast on all social medias, including YouTube and Twitch, where fully edited vodcasts are housed with exclusive clips. Remember, the more followers we get, the more we can give back to the goalkeeping community. Let's all keep paying that knowledge forward, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me, we have no Omar Zini Pro GK Academy right now. I think he's still finishing up at Vegas Lights. Saskia Weber is now big time, and she's at a special event that she's judging at. So shout out to her and all her wonderful things going on. Shout out to Angel City. Obviously, we're excited to see them on the field next year. But because of that, guys, honestly, we have a man who really doesn't need an introduction to most insiders out there. You know this guy, founder of Camp Shutout, the one and only Stan. Stan, you look amazing, man. I always love seeing your background with all the gloves, all the autographs. It doesn't get any more higher level than that.
Well, that's kind of, yeah, I owe a lot to these people back here. They are good friends, dare I say family, and I wish I could get all of them. Well, let's see what we can do here a little bit. So we got a little bit over there, but.
Just a few. And very exciting, I'm going to get to see this wall for myself in person for the first time tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited about that, Stan. For those of you guys who don't know, Stan is a philanthropic a giver to the community, guys, not just on the field, but off the field as well, too. And he's involved in this one special project right now that has been raising a ridiculous amount of money. Why don't you tell some of the people out there who might not be familiar a little bit about the Venmo Challenge?
Yes, I'll keep it quick. It started in September of 20, and we went out for dinner and we just wanted to leave a pretty good tip, a $500 tip. It ended up being a $100 tip that we gave because it just didn't seem to work at the first place, which was a rib joint here in town, in the city. And so we gave the $100 tip on a $109 bill. So it was a pretty good tip. They were very appreciative. But we drove across town and gave the additional $400 to a place called Wells Brothers Pizza, which is nationally known, good friends of mine as well. And we gave them $400 for a small pepperoni pizza. And it kind of snowballed from there. And so here we are 28/33 restaurants later, and our gifts have ranged from $100 that night to $400 to $2,000 to $2,020 to $3,000 to $4,000 to $6,000 to $10,000 in gifts to various local restaurants or really local establishments. Our Racine Zoo is big time here. We gave them $10,000, coffee shop, $6,000. And ultimately we're at about around $90,000 now. $100,000 is our goal. We're looking forward to having you guys in. I was fortunate to receive an award here in Racine. This was made by Hot Shop Glass and Corporate Citizenship of the Year Award, which...
Wow, congratulations. Round of applause on that one. That's awesome.
Quite frankly, you know, with all this stuff in the office is nice, and a lot of soccer stuff here in the office, but this project has kind of grabbed me by the ass and brought me in, so...
I mean, honestly, I think one of the really cool things about this, Stan, is first off, you know, the shot of you at the zoo, surprising everybody at the zoo and then handing out the money. I mean, I think, you know, you guys, you have to go out there and check out the Venmo Challenge Racine social medias and you'll see these videos out there and you'll see that how much of an appreciation there is from the community for these endeavors, for these outreaches, for these gifts that are being gifted out there. A lot of people, you know, think, oh, because, you know, there were here in the United States, there were loan programs and everything that, you know, that solved the problems, but it really did not. It was more putting a Band-Aid on a larger issue, which is a lack of funds coming in for about a year.
Yeah, that, you know, all due respect to anybody who's in those government programs, they've been crap. They have not been helpful. They've been overutilized and underutilized and overexposed and underexposed. And too many restaurants that didn't need the money got the money, and too many people with connections. And like anything, those things happen in whatever you know scenario that is as it relates to the government. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. They just were not taken care of. We went into a place called The Void, and they tried every which way to be involved in receiving some of that government money. And it just there's so many wormholes that you go down in those programs, and it just does not prove to be as helpful as people think. They really do think that, you know, they got tens of thousands of dollars to help them through this. And the reality is it just did not happen for most restaurants, severely underfunded.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, one of those things about that too, in regards to restaurants, one of the really cool things with the whole aspect of the restaurants is that people love food, and it also brings community together. So a lot of people are really willing to galvanize when it comes to food offerings. And we kind of came up with this little idea of kind of combining a show and a dinner out there in Racine. So that's one of the reasons, guys, why I'm flying out along with two incredible comedians, one from Los Angeles, Dahlia Malik, who was recently featured by Elizabeth Banks as a comedian you should be watching in 2021. Pratik Srivastava out of Chicago, who was a finalist for Stand Up NBC. And then we got some amazing, you know, comics coming in who've been on Comedy Central and Saturday Night Live and all those sorts of things this coming weekend. So why don't you kind of tell a little bit about what Dine and Laugh is, and I'm going to throw the link up here. So if any insiders out there know anybody in the Racine area, Milwaukee area, Chicago area, and want to share this out, here's all the information.
Yeah. First of all, the fact of you guys coming in is hugely appreciated. So that's fantastic. And this is going to be a unique weekend for our project for sure. The Venmo account is at Mary P. Anderson. That's M-A-R-Y, the letter P, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, for anybody that's from afar that wants to drop a couple bucks that way. It'll go directly to a local restaurant. We've stayed in Racine, Wisconsin for the most of it. But you guys are coming in, and we're going to have Friday night two shows, Saturday two shows. The shows will be catered by local restaurants that have been gifted in our project. And one actually that hasn't been gifted that has helped tremendously, Captain John's. And that'll be the Friday night show. And a bunch of my friends will be going. We're going to have at least 50 people at the Friday night show. So it's really unique in the sense that George's Tavern on Main Street, mainstay here in Racine, they're going to be hosting, and you guys will all be there doing your stand up deal and making people laugh, and people from the community will be showing up, and they'll be treated to a meal from 5 till 6, for example, and the show from 6 till 7:30, and then we'll tell them to get the hell out, and then we'll do it all again at 8 o'clock, 8 till 9 a meal, and 9 to 10:30, and then drink till your heart's content at George's, and then do it all again on Saturday. And it's pretty cool because, you know, the effort is grassroots. It is simply and solely money in, money out. It's just a pass through. The money comes in, the money goes to a restaurant. It's that simple. And George's, where we're going to be at, they were gifted, and their family's great. And they've been at George's for 30 plus years. And it's another generation now that's running it. And, you know, they've decided to help give back as well. So, you know, for anybody, I guess, that's in coaching, I'd wrap this aspect up, or, you know, this question up. If you're in coaching there, it can be absorbing. It can absolutely take you in, and you can just be solely focused on it. And marriages have been lost, you know, in every phase of life, but coaching can get so obsessive. At the end of the day, something like this has been such a great outlet, because the ability to give back to people, not even in the game, just to give back to people is so huge. I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think one of the really cool things about this, you know, and we're going to definitely get into the topic here, guys, and get back into the meat and potatoes, as Bushy says, of goalkeeping. But is that this never would have happened if it weren't for the GK Union, if it weren't for the fact that we connected, you know, originally in Chicago at convention, and then, you know, stayed in touch through the podcast. And obviously, you know, myself and Omar came out to Camp Shutout, you know, for a year out there and helped coach and did a little show and everything like that. None of this would have even been possible, you know? And so I think this is right now showing just how important that community is when it comes to goalkeeping. You know, just to keep it back on the goalkeeping tip, but guys out there, you don't know how you might be able to collaborate in something that doesn't even have anything to do with goalkeeping and great how to point. Help each other out there, you know. Shout out to all the young advocates. I mean, obviously Aubrey McGlynn, we just had on, you know, last week, you know, who's doing stuff to raise awareness for dysautonomia. Jamie Campbell, you know, has done stuff, you know, in regards to community outreach, especially programs in Africa. Dylan Mapson with Keepers Care for Kids for Cancer. I mean, this is what it's all about. This is what the GK Union is really all about.
That's a great plug. That's a great statement. Those are great words. It is the union in its shining light right there. All of those. I hope this as well. Most of the people that we've even interacted with, they don't even know I'm a coach. They don't have a clue, and that's fine by me. Our media coverage has been fantastic. Our social media coverage has been fantastic. And at the end of the day, it's quite simply filling a void where others are, others just aren't getting it done. And you know, some people do need to step up in whatever phase, like Dylan, and fill those voids. So we're pretty stoked about it. You'll see a ton of stuff in my office when you get your backside here tomorrow.
Well, I'm excited about that, man. So let's get a little bit into this topic right here, guys. And today's topic, guys, is one that's actually very near and dear to Stan's heart. By the way, we just got word Omar Zini will be joining us once his team meeting is over. You know, he's big time now, so he's got to finish up his team meeting first before he can join us. But today's topic, guys, set piece management. Stan, maybe for some parents out there who are listening and they don't know what we mean by set piece, what do we mean by set piece?
It is so much a part of the game that people don't realize. Anytime that game stops, you're basically involved in a set piece. It can be indirect, it can be direct, it can be a throw-in, it can be a penalty, it can be the kickoff, it can be a goal kick, it's a corner kick. I mean, you can go on and on with moments that are set pieces, indirect, inside the box. How do you manage all these things? Mm-hmm. And the reality is that goals happen. Goals happen off of set pieces at astounding rates. And it's, you know, should be obvious. It's a serve inside the box. So in many cases, or it's a shot at goal. So, you know, you should think that there are going to be goals that happen out of this, but the problem ends up in the transference between training ground and game and trust between goalkeeper and team, or staff and goalkeeper, or staff and team. And that whole confusion takes place. And that becomes a little bit of a problem in translation, because in my eyes, of course, I'm going to think, trust the goalkeeper, let the goalkeeper, who's ultimately going to be judged by what happens, whether it be a goal against or a save or something that unfolds in the moment. And the reality is that trust the goalkeeper to solve that problem, because they're the one with the best view, not the coach at the touchline, not the injuries or substitutions that happened that affected the pregame plan to have this guy or that guy in the wall, and this guy on the end, and that guy on the other end, and this guy in the middle, and this guy turning, and all these type of things. That some of those work and often some of those don't.
You know, I love what you just said in regards to one thing about the translating it from the training pitch, you know, to the actual game, because I think one of the biggest problems out there, Stan, and I don't know how you feel about this, is that a lot of young coaches out there, when they approach set pieces, they coach it from concept rather than reality. They don't go through film of moments before or trends that they're seeing. Instead they go, when the ball's here, you put this many people here. When so-and-so's here, you do this. But in reality, it's all based on triggers and cues. It's all based on scouting these players and knowing their tendencies.
Huge. Triggers and cues are great words that I'll probably continue to use, because I use clues. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there are things that do trigger the movement of the goalkeeper. And without those moments, like a team asking for 10 and a referee now starting to walk things off, you know, you don't immediately just go to your post when that happens, talking about a strike outside the box, perhaps. What's up, boss?
Hey.
At the end of the day, you've got to go over at the right time at the post to line up that wall. Not early and not late and not linger. So at the end of the day, there are very important things. And, you know, we got bit in the backside when we left the Fire to go over to FC United. And good old Georgi Mihaljevic, good friend of mine, loved coaching him. And he saw that our goalkeeper made a mistake. And there was a second ball on the field and the goalkeeper was going to get it. And, you know, really it wasn't involved in the play. The referee decided to let it go. And he got to the post and Georgi decided, you know what, I'm not asking for 10. I'm going to have a crack. And he beat us and made it look silly. It made us look silly. It was a 2-1 game in the academy. So, you know, at the end of the day, the triggers and clues are massive. And you won't get those from a former midfielder who does not understand what to do with the men in front when you're trying to prevent a goal from an attacking set piece. It's not a shot at them. They've just never worn gloves and they don't know. It's not a shot at them.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, Omar, obviously this is something, you know, obviously with you in the professional setting now is so important. And a lot of youth coaches need to hear this out there because they leave this up to the team coaches. They leave set pieces up to because they say, well, there's 17, you know, teams or even more, 60 teams at my youth club. How am I supposed to talk to all these coaches about how their goalkeeper should be handling set pieces? But that should be part of the curriculum, right, Omar?
Of course. Yeah. And I think, you know, players have different priorities. For me, I always felt that I needed somebody on my first post and back post. That was my priority. That's what I wanted all the time. But then we have Steve, for example. He's telling me at the professional level and in Germany where he was playing, they want to have more of a numerical advantage in certain areas. So having people on the post is not going to allow us to match up everybody in the box. This is why we're playing zone. So for me, those conversations are important to have, not only with the goalkeeper coach, but then I relay that to the goalkeeper. And now we have constant dialogue. And now that dialogue allows the team to be comfortable and then find a happy medium for the goalkeeper as well.
Yeah. You know, Stan, I have a question for you right here, because obviously, you know, we talk a lot about in regards to comfortability and making sure that young goalkeepers feel comfortable in situations. Do you feel that this disconnect between the team coaches, the outfield coaches, and the goalkeeper coach when it comes to set pieces is why so many young goalkeepers are, for lack of a better term, freaked out by set pieces and panic?
Sure. You know, they're lost unless they've spent a lot of time doing it. Look, this happens at the highest level. If we were to put a spotlight on one game right now of the U.S. and their qualifying on the men's side in particular, we'd put that spotlight on the Panama game. And that corner that was, you know, whipped in and finished, well, finished by us, but nonetheless, that was a pretty bad scenario overall at the highest level. Okay. There's nothing higher than that, obviously, other than the actual World Cup itself and then the World Cup final. But, you know, when a 12-year-old steps in and doesn't really have the understanding, that's an issue. When a 15-year-old is more worried about other things that are going on off the field in his life than, you know, commanding his back line, or doesn't want to tick somebody off by yelling at them to get a job done. These little moments come up in young players' lives that end up being an issue that can sometimes carry on. You know, that goalkeeper that ends up being just a boss, male, female, doesn't matter, on the field and commands situations. You know, coaches are going to walk by. You may not do anything physically, but they're going to hear you and they're going to go, damn. They may not bark like Peanut there, but they're going to go, damn.
That's commanding, though. That's showing command, clear, concise, exactly. Direct communication. Exactly. This is what I want right now.
Yeah, and I think I so kind of want to add on to that as well. Like, we, you know, from the goalkeeping side, I've worked on, you know, stuff in isolation. Like yesterday, it was kind of, you know, the first day back, so we didn't want to have the goalkeepers diving, but at least get some functional training. So we worked on different types of set plays in terms of goal kicks and how we receive the ball and where our first touch goes, and different scenarios where the center back turns back and plays you a wild ball. Can you switch the ball off one touch, two touch? So we're playing all those situations. But then I remember we played against Phoenix this weekend, and even though we're working in isolation, there are certain things that you have to work as a team. It doesn't have to be, a full session, but it could be 30 minutes as long as the concepts are being introduced. And we had a situation where we played the ball to our left center back, and our left back was too high. So now that the striker was sitting on top of the corner of the 18, defending both the center back and the wing, or our wing back, for example. And had we just discussed that in training, even though we worked it in isolation, had we just said, look, we need our center back to be a little bit flatter and wider, and then our wing back to be lower. So now our center back has space to drive down the middle if that option's not on. Versus what happened, we played our center back. He played it straight back to our goalkeeper. Now our goalkeeper is being pressed by a guy who literally had to run 5 yards to guard three people. So again, those are situations that we talk about with set pieces. I used to panic in set pieces because I would probably work on it in isolation, but then my defenders weren't in the positions they were supposed to be. My tall guys would stay on the inside or instead of the outside. So as long as the coaches can hit the curriculum of like once a week, let's just discuss set pieces, just so there's some accountability and say, look, like we've worked on this. You should have the muscle memory that we've worked on it before, versus putting the onus on the goalkeeper and then they're panicking. And then in that situation, nobody's on the same page, and then they score. And now it's a whole situation where we could have been proactive versus reactive.
100%. And, we work so hard to defend against not tackling at the top of the box, standing people up, et cetera. We work so hard on that. But then often across the globe, people don't work on what's going to happen in that next step. It's going to be a set piece. I mean, Messi's over the ball against Brad Guzan, 28 yards away across the face of the goal, still puts it in the upper 90. That's an outlier. That's a guy who probably doesn't bleed red. So other people are gonna struggle in these moments, both on the striking end and on the defending end. It's just best to prepare them and prepare them better.
I want to bring up something. I mean, go ahead, Omar. There's something you want to add right there.
I think again, the more chemistry is built up, the quicker you can have those commands in those situations. I mean, that's really what it is. You have a certain amount of time, finite amount of time, whether it's a quick, set piece or we talk about I forget his name, Mike, but talking about Ants, automatic negative thoughts. You know what I mean?
Like there are Abrahams.
Dan Abrahams, right away on set pieces, you're already thinking about the worst case scenario. But if you already have the proper commands, you say this, you say that, then all you have to worry about is your job. Then I think that's the ultimate unlock of freedom for us goalkeepers to play freely and to give us the ability to focus on our job versus having to do a multitude of things. And then at that point, we're doing everything at 10% versus one thing at 100 and then finishing that task. Then another thing at 100, which is our job to obviously guard our side and pray that our wall will cover that side for us, our weak side. So I think that it's just those commands and those things, those triggers need to happen in training.
Go ahead, Sam.
We spend a good amount of time at Camp Shutout on that. Not enough time at FC United. I'd like to do more with that. At the end of the day, we use four words and you should have your wall set. And that's you bark out the amount that you need, four. Once you get your four, then when it's right, when the trigger in the queue, there you go, Michael, is right, you can get over and get your wall set. And it's either right one, left two. So it's four, right one, and then it's hold. You don't use hold for anything else in the game except that moment. And so that's when you're set then. You can get that done in 5 to 10 seconds, and you have that window of time. Then it's trust your work. Then it's trust what you've done. You can certainly scan and see what's going on in the box at the top of the box and depending where the ball is and all these sorts of things. But in a dangerous moment, four words, get it done. It doesn't require a dialogue, this unbelievable conversation. You should be barking this, getting it done, and then moving into the critical moment.
Yeah, and I think, I wanted to throw this up here right here. And shout out to 6 Yard Box for making this awesome little design from that time when you were on Ronda Mars's podcast right here. But I love one of the things that you put right here in regards to building your wall, and that's note the kicking foot, because I think a lot of young goalkeepers out there, they don't take that into consideration. They literally just are so focused on setting their wall and where the player can strike the ball. They don't even think about how dominant. And again, Omar, that's where scouting comes into play, right? You need to know which is the dominant foot, where this player likes to strike their balls, all those things.
Yes. Also, too, I mean, this past week we played against Phoenix, and I think the week before I want to say it was San Diego. And they have, you know, two guys sometimes who are stepping over the free kick. And let's say it's, you know, 20 yards out outside the 18, but more on the flank. They always say, look, we watch the film. This guy's either going to strike with his left foot. He might pump fake and then make sure our back line doesn't move. And still, even though we watch film and we know through the scouting report, and as goalkeepers, we can't do too much about it, our defense dropped. I was against Phoenix, dropped off. And now, obviously, there's more chaos and there's more opportunities for that second ball to land on top of the PK. And then you're, you know, seeing the ball through traffic, which has happened to us a lot. So I think it's those situations as well where, like, we, at the end of the day, we can only do what we can. And if our guys don't watch the scouting report and know that the pump fake is just to push everybody deeper, then we're just going to be in a really bad position. So it's just, again, communicating those things, watch the pump. But again, it's making sure you can articulate everything, like you talk about in that graphic, articulate all those things. So then you can just worry about what you need to worry about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
No, that's exactly correct.
I mean, I want to bring this up with you, Stan, right here, because I think one of the problems, and I think you both kind of touched on it, is the fact is that when we train in isolation, when we do goalkeeper coaching, especially at the youth level, especially at the youth club level or the high school level, or and there's no team involved, and you go back to your team and you start recognizing the triggers and cues of the fellow goalkeepers that you train with at your goalkeeper sessions in isolation, but you don't know how to read the cues of your actual opponents or even your own teammates because you don't work with them. You don't communicate with them enough. And I think this is where the education on the outfield coaches needs to come into play, is they need to know the roles of their goalkeepers as if they're the goalkeeper too. Because I think a lot of the times they work on set pieces based on their team dynamic from a defensive shape standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, but they don't even take into consideration how the goalkeeper sees this scenario.
Sure. And it's to what I mentioned before, the reality is that, I love me some Dax McCarty. I don't know why Dax McCarty comes to mind. He's a phenomenal player and got a pretty kick-ass personality. If Dax McCarty became the head coach, or Landon Donovan, who just turned down a job in MLS, at the end of the day, if those guys were running that session, they wouldn't know what to talk to the goalkeeper about what needs to be done from their perspective. And again, that's okay. That's why there are guys like yourself and Omar and Saskia and myself and Todd Holford, and I could go on, Sarkey here, right? That's why we are to help goalkeepers through those moments. When they do train with us, you know, largely it's going to be technical work. Certainly at the youth level, it's going to be more of a warm up with a little bit of technical work and maybe preparedness at the collegiate level. And then you're looking at some maintenance at the professional level and a little bit of an enhancement. But at the end of the day, that those moments of managing a set piece, they're just not done enough. They're not worked on enough. You know, you could look at any and look, I don't know if you guys agree, but I don't believe that kids in our country watch enough football to help them. And if you do watch and study and listen and go and sit behind the goal and all these sorts of things, you're going to find out that there's a hell of a lot more to the game than showing up on Tuesday and Thursday for practice from 5 till 6:30. You know, there's a mountain of information out there that you need to help make you successful, not just as a goalkeeper. And so, you know, that would help us. That would help goalkeepers to be able to realize what somebody did. What did Andrew Butna do in this moment? What did Matt Turner want in that moment? You know, I thought that was horrific defending against Panama. If you look at the feed from Universo, it looked like we were attacking the corner, and it looked like Panama was defending. They were so underneath us. But you know, that was their plan to approach it, obviously from a zonal perspective, and that's what they did. So I'm assuming that there was a lot of team understanding and work in that moment, because the corner happened at a pretty normal rate. It wasn't like there was an injury and people settled in. Corner was called, corner was taken, goal was scored. I'm assuming that was work done on the training ground.
Yeah, I want to bring this up because in regards to, you know, you're talking about one specific snapshot, one specific scenario that happens out there. And Omar, we've discussed this a lot with a lot of different goalkeeper coaches out there, and I'm sure you've discussed it as well. And in your breakdowns, you've done some phenomenal breakdowns in regards to showing. I think you did Lehman back in the day, and how he takes these mental snapshots. And this wasn't in a set piece situation. This was in a run of play situation. But we've discussed how important it is to take the mental snapshot before the scenario, before that final action actually takes place. And I think a lot of young goalkeepers out there, they try to deal with the moment, not even recognizing, having awareness of where players are making those runs or any of those sorts of instances.
Yeah. And I think, to Stan's point, I think the importance of watching the game, I think if you can, obviously, if you make the errors, you'll learn from them. Of course, those are painful lessons. But if you can watch others at the professional level or even at the local level, watch them make mistakes and then learn from those mistakes, you're going to expedite your understanding, like you said, Mike, of those snapshots, of those runners. I stepped in goal as our goalkeeper was injured.
So wait, what?
I stepped in goal at training today. And there was a place.
How'd you do?
I did okay. I mean, I conceded one goal in the goal I'll tell you about. But, our striker was coming down the flank. And I told myself, well, I see a runner already going. So I already have an idea that he might pick him out. And then I started leaning and he struck it near post. And I got a hand to it, but it went in. So it's like sometimes those mental snapshots can kind of have you leaning and leading. But again, those mistakes and watching those things on TV can give you those understanding of, like, even though I know it's going there, I can have my feet ready, but I can't leave myself vulnerable. So same thing we talk about with set pieces on free kicks, for example. I know for a fact sometimes I might put somebody in the zone at the near post who may not be the tallest person. So my feet, I've already adjusted. So I know that if it does go right over their head, I can get there. So I think, talk about the Panama goal. I mean, Yossi's not he's not a short guy. So I think that was just a great ball, a bad situation, just bad all around. But if he could probably do it again, I think Matt would have tried to be a little bit more positive in that situation and just kind of run through it. But again, hindsight is 20/20. But again, those snapshots don't necessarily just happen in lifetime, but more so, okay, if this happens, I'm ready. If this happens, I'm ready. And then that's why I keep our shoulders and everything open up just slightly, so I can get a near post run, a central run, and a far post run. So that's what I'm saying. We keep those snapshots, to us, but also set up our body in a way where we can adjust to each one of those.
But I love what you just said right there, Omar. And Stan, I think that's something that we really have to take into consideration, is that you have to prepare for all scenarios on that ball. Let's say it's a corner, let's say it's a free kick or whatever. And if you're not prepared for all scenarios, you're only going to be able to activate yourself for one scenario, because if it doesn't meet your expectation, you're going to panic, So we have to know what are the player. And this is why we get back to, as a goalkeeper, you need to know what the player's options are. If you don't know what the player's options are, you're just reacting. You're not being a proactive goalkeeper.
Yeah. You're 100% correct. And I think goalkeepers have elephant like memories. We see something that happened in a moment. And in that moment, we might not face it again for another 2 years in particular, but we've got to be able to recall that pretty quickly in a critical time. You're facing a corner. Is it in swinging? Is it out swinging? Is it driven in at the near post or the far post? Is it driven in on a lower plane or is it lofted back post? Is it played short? All these scenarios have to go through your mind. And I'm assuming the conversations with Dan Abrams were in the sense of, yes, in those moments you're preparing for the worst, because there's nothing behind us other than what everybody wants. And that's that 8x24 area that everybody wants to get to, that you're supposed to tell everybody to get the hell out of. And so you've got to do your best to manage that moment that could happen 1,000 different ways. Deflection training. I mean, we don't necessarily prepare for an own goal. That I know, Giassi, I'm not a Giassi hater or anything. I know that U.S. Men's National Team Twitter loves to go at him. I think he's a good player. He didn't want to score the goal there, But at the end of the day, it happened. And that's one thing we don't prepare for. And if we're able to save that ball, fantastic. Good on you, Matt. I think who's had a great run so far. But yes, you've got to prepare for unbelievable different scenarios, different moments. And, you know, having people goal side and having your height matchups, I think are two critical things that I'll call for on top of all the other things that we've already mentioned. And it's just, it's not as, ultimately, it's not as easy as everybody thinks. And, you know, for us, it's people who love the position, it might not be as difficult as others think as well. And there's a little bit of a gray area there.
Go ahead, Omar.
No, I think for any young kids out there, or even I would say parents as well, I think one of the best pieces of advice my head coach at UC Davis told me was, he says, Omar, I understand that you want to make an impact on these crosses and these set pieces. I'll just say corner kicks, for example, or, you know, balls into the box. He's like, but we have defenders and they have jobs as well. So you need to feel comfortable and confident that they're going to take care of their roles. And then you have to make sure that you take care of your roles. I don't want you trying to say, well, I made this mistake or I left the goal vulnerable because I was trying to make up for somebody else's space or somebody else's deficiencies. He's like, I just want you to take care of what you need to take care of. If it gets past them, then you step in. And when you're called into action, you make the save. So I think, again, that's the big thing as well. If you don't work on these, I think as goalkeepers, we try to do more than we should. We try to, you know, stay central on walls and not go too far to our left, keep that side open or keep our near side open. We try to do too much. And I think if we have those conversations prior with as much knowledge and information as we have, and that, you know, I guess that safe space that our coach gives us of like, you do your job, these guys will do their job. As long as you have that, in my opinion, you're going to be able to take care of what you need to take care of. And at the end of the day, if they score, okay, we've watched the film, but at least it's a productive situation, not just, okay, we made a mistake. And yeah, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. No.
But there's something I want to bring up right there, Omar, because you brought up actually a really good point. And Stan, you know, I want to ask this before Matt go into some clips right here and kind of break these things down right here on these set pieces, is that a lot of times one thing I see at the youth level is people arguing. They're on different pages. Three, and then four kids go show up. No, four. Like, and it's like, hey, you know what? You got to live and die. If your goalkeeper makes this decision, don't argue and start changing things up. Or if the coach all of a sudden starts freaking out and go, no, I want this or whatever. This has got to be, guys, you got to deal with this earlier. This can't happen on the field, because I tell you what, another team is seeing that. And they're seeing that mismanagement going on. And again, this is about set piece management. And they're going to say, we have them. They have no plan. They're not organized, you know, and we're going to be able to get them at some point in this game.
Yep. Yep. 100%. 100%.
You know, I want to do this. Omar, are you cool with us bringing up some very positive Las Vegas Lights clips of Alex?
Oh, God. You have some?
I do.
What time is it Central Time right now? I got a 51 minute here. What time is it?
It is Central Time 4:31 right now.
4:31. Okay. So I got about 10 more minutes.
Okay. All right. Good. So let me throw this up here right here. I'm going to, let's see if I can find this here. All right. Boom.
Fourth save of the night for Blanchett.
Oh, hold on. I'm going to pause this here. This is not the play I wanted to go to. This is, let's see here. Not this one. It's the next one, I believe, here.
And just blank out the scores.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to start here. Okay. So Orange County, obviously a very good team. We're going to start it right here. Okay. So right here, basically, Omar, walk us through this right here. I guess this is in the 38th minute against Orange County. For those of you guys who want to check this out, last game that Orange County played against Lights. Rando's in goal. Balls deep out. One in the wall. Looks like a dummy step over and then a strike by, how do you pronounce this, Omar? Is it Miko Kunigas?
Can I have no idea how to say his name. No. But I think if you watch it here, I think that's what we talk about is that that first player steps over and our line is supposed to hold. And they do for a second here. But again, there's everyone on different pages at some time. So just press play and you'll see it's kind of like a, yeah.
Ball. But see, I think that this is good. But once again, you can only do what you can do. Because at the end of the day, like what Stan was saying, is like, hey, you know, they're going to have a responsibility and you have a responsibility. And he recognized that in swinging ball right there going into about, I think it was 12 or so, when he recognized that he's not going to go for that, he drops back.
Yep.
And then he recognizes the loop of that ball and look at this little shuffle already, because he sees where that ball's bending. And he knows that if he has to have a clean hold right there, because that one dude's coming there. So if he spills that ball, that dude can step back into it and slam it in, and or he has to steer it away. I think this is a good play by Alex, in my opinion.
It is. It is. Yeah, no, I we work on it a lot, too. It's just our inbox defending sometimes. If you actually look in this game, by like 5 minutes later, we gave up a dumb free kick in like the 44th minute, and they scored off a set piece. So this is just like, I'm speaking off of what I already know is going to happen in a few minutes.
See, Omar, that's the problem, is that you already know the entire game right here. See, if this was somebody else's clips, you'd be just dealing it with just the picture right here. But now you're venting out to us. Stan, any thoughts?
Well, I can show you a clip real quick of Alex in a very good. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
This is what I was saying earlier. Well, I just want to show you guys again. This is the something that we wanted to work on with our center backs, but we didn't. Is this right? You guys can see my screen. The goal kick setup.
It's black right now.
It's not up yet. There now it's up.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys can see it here. So again, we talk about this defender in this spot right here on the on the right side of the 18-yard box. And, you know, had we, you know, I would say discussed this set piece or this set play prior, and I think we had it in certain, you know, moments throughout the season, but there's so much to talk about. And I think had we discussed this more, our left center back and our right center back would be a lot flatter and wider. I know this new goal kick rule that has us all excited about having guys, you know, inside the 18. But I think if our left back, CeCe, if he's dropped off towards the 18 a little bit more and a little flatter, then this guy is in it, you know, a little bit more of a, say, corner of the 18. But then if he comes, then we tend our left back, Eric Olasky, to drop off as well. So now this defender has to guard this line centrally for our center midfield to receive it, and this line as well. And if he has to choose between these two lines, then our center back can step forward. But instead, this is what happens. Our guy is too high, and our center back is too narrow. So when we play this ball, this guy has literally a straight path towards Alex.
Yeah.
So we got very, very fortunate here. You don't see the clip, but Alex actually found an entry ball in between lines. So I think he may have had a solution, or he may have come up with one as he was going. But again, had we discussed this a little bit more, this center back would feel more comfortable. It would have just been CeCe flat. That would have been the conversation, and as quickly as possible. And then the same thing with Eric. Eric would have known to drop off a little bit more as well to be an option. And now this defender, instead of having literally a direct path and being able to guard four guys with one route, then again, the situation would, you know, could have been avoided.
Yeah. Hey, you're great. You're great with video. So that's fantastic. It's always been one of King Omar's qualities. at the end of the day, we can also, as a goalkeeper, from a perspective of whether it's pro all the way down, is always remember that we can move people with our eyes. Looking one way and simply stepping there can move people, and that opens up an opportunity that they don't even realize. When you look at the six and their 11 decides to pinch in a little bit, and now you're able to play wide, and little different things like that. That, you know, again, it goes back to how much are you going to invest in your own development, and you know, how much are you going to go. If you live in Las Vegas, you're going to get your backside over to a Las Vegas Lights game and sit behind the goal. Are you going to be able to go to a New Mexico game and sit behind the goal and watch Emily play? And whoever it may be, you know, that's out in that area. Wherever you are, there's opportunities to go and be able to see the mistakes and a goalkeeper being able to get out, as Omar just said, out of a situation. Quality players problem solve.
Yeah, and I love what you just said there, Stan. First off, I mean, obviously, I know we're getting a little bit off the topic here, but the fact is that this is very true. Is that when it comes to communicating, when it comes to moving players and all those sorts of things, it doesn't have to be grandiose gestures type of a thing, because a lot of times a grandiose gesture is a telegraph movement to the other team. And I love what you said about, like, you can just move players with just a slight thing of your eyes, that sort of a thing. So I think that is absolutely phenomenal for a lot of young goalkeepers to hear that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really can happen. It's as simple as that. I don't know if you have if you're able to pull up the clip of Messi scoring on Guzan, I think it was in Soldier Field. I think it was in the Copa America. But, you know,
Copa America 2018, right?
Yeah.
2017, yeah.
It might have been 17. Yeah, that's more like that. That's more like it. Yep, 17. In that moment, what you'd see is that you'd see a situation where Guzan ends up crawling behind his wall one step. Okay.
How did you find that so fast, Omar?
I did it quick.
I was at this game, and it was just it was unbelievable to see. But you see, he's a pretty good distance out, 22, 3, 4, 5, 25 to 27 yards out. And, you know, that's a good distance. It's not for Messi. But, you know, if you freeze as he strikes, Brad steps to his right. And this is what I mean by the trust your work aspect, is he's got a lot set there. He's got a lot going for him that's good. You know, the wall seems to be in a good place. His line seems to be in a good place. That one little movement to his right, and he gets beat in that equal distance to his left. And, you know, he's able to touch that around the bar, over the bar, whatever, if he's able to hold his work, shuffle over, and make that save. It's not easy. We're micromanaging. You know, I'm picking this apart. But when you're facing Messi, you know, those are the type of things, those are the inches you need to be prepared for.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate, though, Stan, do you think it's one of those things where from a scouting report, he was told to shift slightly that direction so that if the ball is lifted, he can cover because Messi most likely is going to try to drive it over the wall. And then it just happened to be that he reads that so quickly because that's Messi and he goes to the other corner.
I would hope not, because for my belief, for my dollar as a goalkeeper, you've got to live the game once the game starts. You can be told where a penalty is going to go, and you know you may decide to do that. And if you do, you make the save. Great. It's still, you know, there's a massive area to score the goal. In this case, I certainly don't think that. And these guys were on our training ground prior to this tournament at UIC training against our academy boys, but. You go onto the field in this moment, and Brad's got to do his best to find the ball and make the save. If he doesn't see the ball, it's going to be very hard, and it'd be very hard to see the ball in that moment. So I think what we do is we go to where it's safe. Again, Brad's a world-level goalkeeper, an international goalkeeper. He went to where it was safe for a moment, which is back towards the middle of the goal, and, you know, in case, and then beat where he was. What I'm saying, I guess, is if you've gone through it enough and you've done the work, trust your work. If he gets beat to his right, I don't think anybody's going to complain. I don't think anybody's complaining that he got beat to his left either. He got beat by a world-class player, by, you know, one of the perhaps best to ever put a kid on. You know, but if he doesn't have that movement, he might make that save. And, you know, I'm not taking a shot either at Brad Guzan. It's a teaching moment is how I use it. Yeah. And at the end of the day, if you can trust your work, you're going to find that you're going to make more saves than you're going to concede.
Yeah. I mean, I actually really love one of the things that you just said right there, Stan, and Omar, I don't know what your thoughts are here, but the fact is that if you want to do it from a percentage standpoint, from an analytics standpoint, if you trust your work, chances are, that you might get beat for that one or two or three times or whatever, but chances are, you know, that six or seven, you will be able to make a play.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the conversation we had earlier too about like, okay, you have a responsibility and don't try doing too much. And if you do, don't get burnt. I think that's the biggest one for me is like, you have your job, do your job. And if you can do a little extra, then do a little extra. And I think, for example, I mean, this is maybe on topic, off topic, but this past weekend, for me, I think there's two different parts to your game, and you need to feel comfortable in both. The first is when everything is on. You're hitting your passes, one touch, two touch, all your clearances are on point. You'll catch the ball at the highest point. You're getting us into counterattacks, proper weight, distance, all that. Then you have the second phase, and that second phase is this distribution's off. You're trying to force things. And with Alex's case this weekend against Phoenix, you know, he has a pretty good left foot. His right foot's a dominant one. But on goal kicks sometimes, he can manipulate the whole left side because they think he's a right footer, so he's going to go there. And then he swings it over the top to our wing back with his left foot. He has that in his arsenal. But a lot of things weren't on, and then he tried to get back on track by not forcing it, but trying to go with the sauce that he has, for lack of a better term. And it wasn't on. And I said, look, man, look, I told him at halftime, I said, look, you are obviously when you're on, when anybody's on, they're having a great day. But when you're not on, you need to feel comfortable in that moment. You need to feel comfortable and be poised and composed that, okay, it's not on right now. Let me just get some minor victories. So that once those minor victories start to stack up and add up, all the confidence will come back and then I can try it again. So I think when it comes to, I think in set pieces as well, just do what you need to do, do them right. And then after you've done them right, then you can take some liberties here and there. And in my opinion, I think with that whole, you know, with Guzan there, I mean, you're playing against a world-class player. So it's literally the entire goal is to his disposal. He can figure out.
I mean, it could have been a mental gymnastics type of thing too. Two situation is like he was overthinking. This
sure,
is Messi.
Sure.
He's going to do the opposite of what I expect him to do, or he sees me doing this, so he's going to do that, blah, blah, blah. Type of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, like what Stan said, I can't remember the exact terms you used a few minutes ago, Stan, but it's like when you're on the field, a lot of the scouting report, it's supposed to guide you. It's not supposed to influence you. Like let it just be there for you to understand that there's different like images and snapshots that you potentially will see. So can you put your body in a position to take care of all of those, but don't put yourself in a position where you're like almost, I'm going to just do this one. And if it doesn't happen, then you're in a bad position, which yeah. I think in that situation, if you were to say with Brad, if you want to be critical, and again, I'm not good. It's Brad Guzan, so he's a pro, but in those situations, I'm sure if he would have held, he would have made the save. So either way, if Messi puts it over the wall and he gets a good lead in, he's saving it too. So either way, he unfortunately chose the wrong one on that one, got scored on, and he's somebody who I'm sure will learn from that, and I'm sure he has since then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hate to run, gents.
No,
I know you got to go.
So,
and I don't think young goalkeepers are going to want to see me driving and looking down at video with my one good eye, so, you know.
All good.
No worries, Stan. No worries, Stan. We'll wrap it up with Omar right here. So I will see you tomorrow. I will see you tomorrow in that office right there. We'll take some snapshots in the office so I can show people that it really exists. It's not a virtual background.
Exactly. Yes. There you go. It is not. And that's the Jens Lehmann glove. That's what I was reaching for a few minutes ago. So
we
have good old Jens on there. So
cool.
All right, guys. Good to see you, King Omar.
Oh, Stan, always a pleasure, my man.
Keep kicking ass, buddy. You're awesome.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow, Michael.
Later, Stan. All right. Let's wrap this up right here, Omar. There's a comment right here actually from Andreas, and he wants to talk about the opposite hand conversation. And I think, you know, I think in my opinion, personally, when it comes to, you know, we had this conversation with Aaron Hyde, you know, of the U.S. men's national team last year. But in regards to this, you know, for us to focus on the final action is kind of missing the, in my opinion, is kind of missing the point. Like, yes, I understand, like, you're finally in that situation where now you're going through the movement or whatever, which hand you go for based on that situation. But is that really something that we should be concerning ourselves about when we're breaking it down? Or should we be talking about the before first?
Or the what? Say it again?
Or the before moment first. Because I think there's just so much focus on the final action when it comes to set pieces. As a young goalkeeper coach, at least I used to always talk about the final action with the goalkeeper as opposed to what happened before that led to that final action.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think to Andreas, you know, credit, I think both of those could have been discussion points. But I think for me, the reason why the top hand in that situation was not an option was because his early movement. So I think that was caused. I mean, I think if he would have gotten in the set position and Messi's shot would have been in the same location, but he hadn't moved or not flinched at all, I think that top hand would have been useful for sure. But I think when you start shifting now, because you're almost delayed now moving back across, this hand is a lot quicker to get here than it is to get here. So in my opinion, again, like you said, the final action or the movement prior led to that final action, actional decision being the bottom hand.
Yeah. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So as Andreas actually put that there. So yeah, exactly. No, but that's a good point. I think that's where I think myself as a coach, I've tried to mature more. And I think as a former player as well, as a former player, you see it in one way. And then as a coach, you see it somewhere different. And then when you actually step back in the goal as a current coach, you start realizing that a lot of things happen a lot faster than you think they're going to happen. And even today, that near post shot, I was like, damn, if I would have told my goalkeeper that, you know, you got to do better there and what were you thinking? Then now I've experienced it and I'm like, oh shit, like I know for a fact that I know you were probably trying to cut that ball off, but because I know that you were trying to do that, take the first part of the play, the phase one of the play. And if they cross that ball and they score, okay, that's a goal we can concede. But you leaning, and like I was leaning and conceding, you know, conceding the near post. Now we're talking about the movement prior, and the final action was a goal near post. So if I just prevented that first movement, that near post goal wouldn't have happened. And a tap in at the far post, we can live with that, in my opinion. But again, do your job first, and then after that, you can start, you know, taking more liberties, I would say.
I got a question for you, Omar, obviously, because you're obviously in this professional environment right now, and a lot of people out there seem to have are kind of stuck in their ways and how they tell young kids, you know, how to handle set pieces when it comes to marking and how to mark their players and stuff. And I know there's some people that live and die by zone and some people that live and die by man. You know, do you have any advice on how to recognize when to go zone, when to go man, or is it really up to your system and really up to your coach?
It's up to your system and your coach. I think, you know, for example, Steve Cherundolo, Hall of Famer, played for the U.S. men's national team, like one of the most, you know, consistent players ever. He likes to play zone and certain two guys in zone and everybody else man marking. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked in our favor because we're not that big. So even with man marking, they're, you know, these balls that are coming in, our guys are unfortunately physically not there. So we're, you know, getting beat to certain headers. But I think for me as a goalkeeper and seeing it the way I want it done is like there are certain things that I need to have someone at my far post. That's just me. So it's can we have those conversations with the head coach depending on their system and what they want? Can we find a compromise that the coach is going to be happy with the play and the players in certain positions, but us as goalkeepers, are we going to feel comfortable if we do come out of our goal, or if we do get a header from like, you know, 7-8 yards out and somebody on the post, you know, helping us out, shrinking the goal a little bit, finding those things. And I think Steve does a great job of opening those conversations to me and saying, hey, what does Alex want? What is he interested in on set pieces that are, you know, corner kicks, a little bit more lateral up the field? What is he interested in? What does he want us to do? So I think having those conversations and that input from the head coach, input from myself, and input from our goalkeeper, there's more of a buy-in, I think, and there's more accountability that we all had to say in the final decision that was made.
Dude, I love one of the things that you said right there, and I think a lot of younger coaches out there need to hear this, and I think a lot of young goalkeepers need to hear this as well, too, is that you need to know what you want. Because there's a lot of young goalkeepers out there who, again, you know, we always joke about, you know, the Saskia when she was at, you know, during spring ball, when the player would turn and look at her on what to do. And he's like, don't look at me. I'm not the one with the gloves on right there. But if you don't teach your goalkeepers to understand what they want and what's going to make them feel comfortable, and they're just waiting for instructions from you, again, you're not creating that thinking goalkeeper right there, you know? And how do we do that, Omar? How do we do that in our session design though? Because that needs to be done by us. We need to help them with that. They're not just going to know automatically.
Okay. I was going to veer off, and you know, I like to veer off topic sometimes, but yeah. When I got into stocks, like last year, a year and a half ago, I would tell my friends like about these new companies, and one of my best friends, he's a financial expert. He did finance in college and all that. And he said, Omar, so what does this company do? And I'm like, I don't know the full breakdown. He's like, if you don't know how to explain it to me, then you don't know anything about the company. And I'm not, why are you even investing it, let alone telling me to invest in it? So I come back to it in terms of the goalkeeping discussion and those conversations that we have with our goalkeepers. And you taught me this early, Mike. And I think, you know, Stan and, you know, Big Joe and Phil and people who have seen me coach, they've mentioned it to me. If we know what you know, Let's see what the goalkeepers know. Let's see if we can extend the olive branch, give them the microphone for a second, see what they have to say. And it might expose that they may not actually know exactly what you're teaching them or what you're saying to them. And again, that stock, you know, story, if you can flip that and use it for your goalkeepers and put on film. And Steve did that for me as well. He said, Omar, instead of, you know, every single week showing Alex the film and breaking it down for him, how about either you bring the film and he breaks it down for you, or he breaks it down himself and brings it to you. So I think that's where I think knowing what you want, being challenged to think and articulate what you want. And then from there, being able to share it and have backing as in terms of examples or video footage that backs it up. All those things will strengthen your argument as well. And then if you give up a goal because you didn't have someone on the far post, and then now you're like, well, look, we needed a numerical advantage, and the goalkeeper can come up with those answers. In my opinion, that's the ultimate unlock for a goalkeeper growing in this game in terms of the development of their understanding of the position.
Dude, I love what you just said right there, because I think most coaches out there, especially at the youth level, they cut the film for their goalkeepers and they give them notes prior to them even watching the film, which is already going to put us. Okay.
Okay. No, I'm with you. It's not bad. I think that is the intro. I think that's the intro level is show. And to Andreas's point, I think another episode we need to do, Mike, is like, how do you break down your footage from a goalkeeper's perspective? Like, what do you look for? Is it only the situations where you did well in? Is it only the negative situations? Are you looking at situations where you did poorly, but then the same situation arose and you showed composure? You see what I'm saying? So now you're looking at, like, yeah, is the psychology of this goalkeeper? Do they have the mental makeup to, withstand adversity or, you know, come back from adversity? And if they can recognize that for themselves, I think that's one. But also teaching them how to find those clips in the game is also very important. And then as their trajectory is like, what's the word I'm looking for? As like students of the game starts to rise, then I think them understanding how to cut down their film is going to rise as well.
Dude, one thing that you just said right here, and we'll start wrapping up and everything like that, is that you said about having the goalkeeper recognize when it was successful and when it wasn't successful in a very similar scenario and what was going on in that moment that made one successful and what not successful. And I think set pieces, honestly, because it's a static type of situation from a film standpoint, is one of the easier types of scenarios to use as a teaching moment for this.
100%. I think that is without a doubt, just slowing it down, because in transitional plays, obviously there's a lot of moving pieces, 3-2, you know, 2-1, offside lines, where you are in relation to your back line. It's all ever, you know, it's ever evolving, very, you know, there's different flows. When it's a set piece, you really have a still snapshot. And I think when you start seeing the still snapshot of where people are supposed to be, what your wall is supposed to look like, what happens when, I get talking about that pump fake, the first runner steps over the ball, does your line, you know, your back line drop off into that, into the 18? What is your reaction to them dropping off? In my opinion, seeing all that in still image from a set piece clip, it gives you so much of an understanding of how the play will play out, and prior to it playing out, how you can prevent certain things, not even with just communication, but your positioning as well. How many times have we seen an outswinger, and we've just adjusted by staying a little bit higher, maybe on top of the six or between the six and the PK, right in there, and how much that's influenced the striker. And then that winger or whatever, they're striking the ball, you know, outside the 18, where even if your defense, you know, drops off, it's not really an issue because you've influenced the server. So I think, in my opinion, those, I guess, standstill clips are so important and giving you actual, like, answers and ways to articulate thoughts in a safe space. And then when things are hectic and more, you know, obviously during the game and more of a flow, then you actually have been able to have that mental recall of using those words and terms that you've had with your goalkeeper coach.
Yeah. One final thing I want to say with you, Omar, before we wrap up here on set pieces, and because this is a question that gets asked to me a lot of times by especially parents, because, I mean, I don't know about you, but when you were in the youth game, parents would always talk to me about, oh, there was this free kick and he did this or she did this or whatever, and yada, yada, yada. Should he have done this? Should she have done this? Yada, yada. How much of it is really mental and how much of it is actual physical when it comes to a set piece?
I think it's a lot of mental for sure. We talked about it before, a lot of the mental gymnastics of it could be lack of experience. And when you're in situations that you've never experienced before, you really don't know how to act. Your body doesn't know how to, I know for example, with Steve, sometimes he'll question me and ask me questions. And early in the season, I've never had someone of his like expertise question me. So when he questioned me, I was very nervous. I wasn't shaking, but I was just like, oh geez, like I don't know the answers. I don't know the answers. And then it made me realize I need to be more prepared and not to be so nervous. This is a safe space. He's somebody who's going to try to help me out. So as those conversations have evolved over the course of the season, I've become way more natural in those moments, way more of a flow. I know you hosting this show when we first started, and you know, I'm sure it was tough at the beginning, but with the flow
in the
experience, right? So I think that is it's mental there, but then also to the physical side as well of I guess not really knowing where to be because you've never experienced it. So I think they go hand in hand.
No, I agree completely. And I think, you know, one of the things is because if you look at a set piece type scenario, I know myself personally when I play and it's gotten better as I've gotten older. But when I was younger, I was much more tense in a scenario that actually really is actually favors the goalkeeper much more than a run of play situation, because there's so many other variables that could come into play in a run of play situation that can't come into play in a set piece situation. And yet I would freeze up more in this and be more robotic in my movements and less dynamic and everything, because I would get in my head about it's a set piece. Oh, they're going to swing this ball in here. Oh, this is going against my strength. Oh, they're lifting this ball right here. I'm not that tall, yada, yada, all those sorts of things. Whereas in run of play, I'm just reacting. So we need to have a balance between that reaction and preparation.
I couldn't have said any better, man. I think that's where, speaking to someone like Phil Wedden, and he describes how he, you know, sometimes puts his sessions together, puts his, you know, drills together, is look at the final action and then back that up a few minutes or, you know, a few seconds, like 10, 30 seconds, and see where the buildup happened. And that's where your drill should start. And I think for set pieces and for us as coaches, for example, it's when we set these sessions up, can we expose the goalkeeper as negatively as we can, right? Expose their limitations on whether it's their communication, setting up a wall, expose them, because as soon as you're exposed, it's constructive criticism, I know. And some people just see it as criticism without the, you know, constructive aspect around it. But if you can expose the young goalkeepers in training on set pieces or balls in behind or, you know, judging flight patterns or tight space distribution, if you can expose them in training, by the time they get to the game, they're going to have answers to questions that some people who haven't been exposed, they're answering those questions, and those are expensive mistakes. So I think, again, to your point, Mike, I think it's the experience. And I think once you've done it enough times, and it's up to us as goalkeeper coaches to make sure that these goalkeepers are, I mean, if there's like levels to it and level like 10 is you're making it to the pros, you should try to get as high in session as you possibly can so that the goalkeeper steps in and that environment's not foreign to them. It's so relevant. It's everything they've been working on in training. I think that's what periodization is super important. And myself this season, I got lost in certain moments where I was only working on distribution, where I was only working on crosses or trying to put all of it together, when in reality, I never really worked on set pieces until the end of the season, until it became an issue. You see what I'm saying? So like it's yeah, up to the coaches as well to, I mean, that's where my experience is coming to as a coach, where it's like, okay, this shouldn't just be trained when it becomes an issue. It should be trained in periodization because it's a part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I don't think you could have said it any better than that. I think we've done probably a good hour and 20 minutes on set pieces, guys. Guys, if you want to know more about set pieces, just DM Omar. He's got plenty of thoughts right there when it comes to set pieces, and he'll be happy to chat with you. No, don't do that, guys. But if you do have a serious question, maybe if you were on this chat watching this live or you're hearing the podcast later on and you do have some specific questions, because we get a lot of questions about this. We'll probably do another episode on set pieces very soon. Just reach out to @ProGKAcademy_. If you have a guest suggestion or topic suggestion, contact it @InsideThe18. That's the number 18media.com or @GoalkeeperPodcast on all social media platforms. Remember, guys, in the chat right here, and we'll also put it in the show notes right here, is where you can donate to the Venmo challenge. I believe it is at the top of the thing right over here. I believe it is for @MaryPAnderson, directly to the Venmo challenge, if you want to donate to the Venmo challenge, guys. And also the link to the Dine and Laugh shows this weekend in Racine, Wisconsin, Friday and Saturday, is also at the top of the chat right there. That's Venmo challenge, racine.bpt.me. what is that? The side slash? What is that slash? What type of slash? Is that, Mark? Yeah. Forward slash. All right, guys. That's all the time on Inside the 18. We are out. Later, guys.